Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Page 5, 1123. Srila Raghava Goswami compares Lord Vasudeva with other Vishnu Tattva forms. These verses, taken from Hari Bhakti Ratna Prakash, will be of great use to your study of later portions of this canto. Text 4a. The most perfect form is Bhagavan Krishna Chandra, who remains in Vrindavan. All other forms of the Lord are not as perfect. The more perfect forms are Lord Balaram and Lord Vasudev, who reigns as the king of Dwarka. The perfect forms include Lord Prajumna, Lord Aniruddha, and other forms of the Lord. Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, Lord Mahavishnu, and others are also counted in the perfect category. Akrura traveled to Mathura with the Vasudev feature of Lord Vishnu. When the Lord was going to Mathura, Akrura saw him as Lord Vasudev reclining on the lap of thousand-headed Lord Ananta. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:39-46. Text 4b. On the curved lap of Seshanag, Akrura saw Krishna sitting very soberly. With four hands, his eyes were like the reddish petals of the lotus flower. His complexion was the dark color of a rain cloud, and he was dressed in yellow silken garments. In the same way, the Lord appeared in Dwarka in his Vasudev form. This may be known from the following passage of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10:60-44, where Rukmini Devi says to Lord Vasudev, O my Lord, O subduer of enemies, an unfortunate woman who has never heard of your glories may accept an ordinary man as her husband. But a woman who has learned about you, that you are praised not only in this world, but in the halls of the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, will not accept anyone besides yourself as her husband. We may note that although Srimati Rukmini Devi does not mention Lord Vasudev by name, it is clear from her description of the Lord that she refers to the Vasudev expansion of Lord Vishnu. The qualities of Lord Vishnu are described in the following statement of Brihan Naradiya Purana. Lord Brahma is known as Swayambhu because he is the first living entity to appear in the universe. Lord Shiva is also known as Hara because he destroys the material universe. Lord Vishnu is known by his name because he is the master of all powers and opulences. Text 6a. After he had gone to Mathura in order to kill Kamsa, the Lord manifested the power and opulence of the Vishnu Vasudeva form. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43-17 in the following words, which describe Lord Vasudeva's opulence by appearing differently to different living entities. Within Kamsa's wrestling arena, the Lord appeared to the wrestlers exactly like a thunderbolt. To the people in general, he appeared as the most beautiful personality. To the females, he appeared to be the most attractive male, Cupid personified. End quote. The Lord also exhibited the character of Lord Vasudeva in other situations. One example is how he expanded into 16,000 forms to enjoy transcendental pastimes in the different homes of his 16,000 wives in Dwarka, as was observed by Mahamuni Narada. Another example is the Lord's revelation of his universal form to Arjuna. The Lord also exhibited a forearm form during the great battles fought after his kidnapping Rukmini and after his taking the Parijata tree of Indra. At various other times also, the Lord of Dwarka rode on Garuda and also exhibited a four-armed form holding the conch, disc, club, and lotus. This feature of Lord Vasudeva is also described by Lord Shiva in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-28. Quote, Lord Shiva continued, any person who has surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the controller of everything, material nature as well as the living entity, is actually very dear to me. Text 7a. This evidence clearly demonstrates that the Lord's form in Mathura and Dwarka is the expansion of Lord Vasudeva. The form of Sri Krishna Chandra is the ultimate form of the Lord and is superior to his form as Vishnu Vasudeva. Vishnu Vasudeva is the master of Vaikuntha Loka. From him, Lord Mahavishnu is expanded. To prove that the Lord's form at Dwarka is Vishnu Vasudeva, the following evidence is quoted. When Jaya and Vijaya were cursed by the Brahmanas at the gateway of Vaikuntha Loka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead spoke to them the following words. If you both agree to become my enemies, I shall liberate you after three births. For this reason, Jaya and Vijaya were born as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, whom Lord Vishnu killed in his forms of Varaha and Nisringa. In the next yuga, Jaya and Vijaya were born as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and were cared by Lord Vishnu in his forms as Ramachandra and Lakshmana. After that, Jaya and Vijaya were born as Shishupal and Dantavakra, and Lord Vishnu appeared as Lord Vasudeva and Lord Balaram, and again killed them. In this way, Jaya and Vijaya attained liberation after three births. Sri Krishna Chandra's power and opulence is superior to that of Lord Vishnu and that of any other person. This is confirmed by the following statement of Narada Pancharatra. Quote, the forms of Lord Ramachandra and the other incarnations of Godhead all spring from Sri Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. From this we may understand that all Vishnu forms and all and other forms of the personality of Godhead are expanded from Sri Krishna Chandra. Sri Krishna Chandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, says in Divya Vrindavan, stays in Divya Vrindavan. He is described in the Goloka Samhita. Quote, the transcendental realm of Vrindavan is situated within the Brahman effulgence. In that transcendental Vrindavan are Radhika Devi, whom all the Lord's potencies respectfully worship, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the crest jewel of all deities. Bhagavatam verse commentary of 1123 is from Hari Bhakti Ratna, Prakash, 5th Ray. So we're bringing here is even Vishnu Sahasranam. You get the element that by chanting Vishnu Sahasranam, so much benefit is there. But you'll get the same benefit by chanting three names of Ram and one name of Krishna. So this since we're chanting, we're remembering the Lord. So he's mentioned that you should hear and chant about the Lord. Now is being established is what form of the Lord and what names of the Lord therefore are the most potent. Right? Because there is variety. He's talking about being they're perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So Krishna in Vrindavan is the most perfect. Then we see that Baladev and Vasudev then are next, and then down from that is Krishna and Dwarka and the Vaikuntha planets and everything else, all other expansions. So they're pointing out this hierarchy so that one may know in chanting, then that option is there of serving the Supreme most, which is Krishna in Vrindavan, right? It's Braja Krishna. Or here he's saying, you know, Divya Vrindavan. And he'll...
What is it called?
Krishna Chandra. He'll refer to him as Krishna Chandra. In other words, the Acharyas will pick one particular term in which they were referring to Krishna in Vrindavan as opposed to other forms of Krishna. Because these other forms also can... Krishna in Dwarka is also called Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So he'll make these distinctions. So Vasudev, Vishnu Vasudev, or Krishna Chandra. So that will be what he'll use. And other acharyas, depending upon the context, then they'll use different words. You know, like here, they'll use Braja Krishna is used a lot like that. Is that understood? Right? It's not. So basically, just trying to take you from, you have so many Vedic processes, but the best is chanting and remembering the Lord. Now he's bringing out, of the Lord, there are these three levels. Right? So then one can do well to remember Krishna Chandra and Vrindavan. Right? Okay. Adhyaya Prakash. Right? So we can understand that, because this was the summary of the chapter, that the whole point of this chapter is establishing that chanting and remembering Krishna and Vrindavan is the essence of all Vedic processes. Okay? Right? So now we're going to the chapter summary. Ajaya Prakash, chapter at a glance. So the question, Nimisha, actually two questions were asked, but here Sukadev deals with them as one question. To the question put before him at the end of Canto 1, Sukadev Goswami replies, "My dear King, your question is glorious. It is most beneficial for all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing. Materially engrossed people are baffled by too many subjects for hearing because they are blind to the knowledge of the absolute truth. During the day, they work hard to earn money. At night, they pass their time in sleep and sexual indulgence. The truth is ever right before their eyes. Unfortunate such materially engrossed persons do not see their inevitable destruction. One who desires to become free from all material miseries must hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The highest perfection is to remember Lord Narayan at the end of life." Sri Sukadev now relates that at the end of Dwapara Yuga, he studied the great literature Srimad Bhagavatam from his father. Suka was a perfectly liberated soul even before his birth. Yet the topics of the Lord's pastimes were attractive to he who was beyond all material attraction. Such attachment to the transcendental qualities of the Lord constitutes the way of further advancement, even for a siddha, completely detached from matter. The chanting of the holy name and the glories of the Lord is the doubtless and fearless means of spiritual success. Sukadev points out the uselessness of a prolonged life devoid of Krishna consciousness, as seen by the example of Katvanga Maharaj, even though one may have a mere moment to live. If that moment is spent taking complete shelter of the Supreme Lord, it is enough to free one from material life. "My dear King," Sukadev continues, "you are even more fortunate than he, because you have 7 days to prepare yourself for death. At the end of life, one must be bold enough to fearlessly cut off all attachment to the material body and all desires that pertain to it." Then Sukadev Goswami explains how materialistic persons can begin their spiritual life by meditating upon the universal form of the Lord. When he is more elevated, a yogi may meditate upon the Paramatma feature of the Lord, who is situated within the heart. Then, ultimately, when the personal feature of the Lord is fully realized, he can begin to act on the platform of pure devotional service. Okay. So he's pointing out that the materialists are wasting their time, and that the devotee is absorbed in the Lord. So we understand is that being absorbed in the material energy without Krishna is useless. And being fully absorbed in Krishna, that is the perfection. Then there are stages to get from the one to the other. That's always important, is that there is a process, right? That will get us from the one to the other. So we want gain, we want safety, but there is a process of that. Due to ignorance, we're lazy, we don't want to act. Due to ignorance, we don't have knowledge, because action is done with knowledge. Right? So if we're ignorant, then there's no knowledge, there tends to also be no action. Right? Does that make some sense? So we see is what happens is abhideya, the process, gets left out. Therefore, you get this conception, I will get something for nothing. Right? The government will give me something for nothing. The schools give me something for nothing. I will buy something for nothing. I don't have to pay anything. Like that. Your lottery, your gambling, I'll get something for nothing. Does that make sense? So this is very much played upon by those who are intelligent in the society, because they know that because the general mass of people are ignorant, therefore they tend to be lazy. So if we can inspire them that they will get something for nothing, then we can get more money out of them. Does that make sense? So they play off of their ignorance. So it's the people who are running the society are very smart, because they know how people work. So the idea is the devotee is supposed to understand this and avoid this. Avoid this by having knowledge, and therefore there's activity. Does that make sense? So the two go together. Knowledge and activity go together. It's a very important key. Because generally is I'll only do it if there's some mystique to it. And if I know, then why would I work for it? Does this make sense? If material life, I don't know that it's not beneficial, then I'll work very hard for it. But if I know it's not beneficial, why would I work for it? Right? This is generally the two situations that tend to be taken. Right? So either therefore we get the fanatic, the PD, like that, or we get, you know, the quote-unquote pragmatic realist. Right? Does that make sense? But these both come from a misunderstanding of the process of devotional service. Right? Because we say devotional service. We're not saying devotional philosophy, devotional results. Right? Isn't it? We're talking about devotional service. So the Abhideya is the thing that means knowledge and activity simultaneously. So then that gives the key to this here, is that the living entity finds himself in the material condition. Now he knows he should get to the spiritual condition. But how is that going to be done? It means how do you bridge between Sambandha and Prayojana except through Abhideya? Right? So my material situation is there, that's Sambandha. But I'm supposed to develop love for Krishna and act as a devotee of Krishna. That's for your Prayojana. How will I get there? So then the process is giving here, with knowledge one performs activity. So through knowledge one sees the potencies of the Lord in everything that one is, that well, the sphere of all of one's activities. Then you understand that well, it's actually the Lord that's entered. It's not just the potencies, it's Him with His potencies. So He becomes more important. Then from that, then that expands into we want to serve Krishna in His, how you say, pastimes with His devotees. You see? So in all of these, then knowledge is used and activity, endeavor is used. Right? Rupa Goswami describes enthusiasm as endeavor with intelligence. Endeavor without intelligence is called sentiment. Endeavor with intelligence is called enthusiasm. Right? Does that make sense? Very important to be able to, just on the material side, to be able to tell the difference, is that when you're working with other people and you want them to be inspired, then generally we mistake this. So if the kids are just enthusiastic, say anything, whatever it is to get them to be enthusiastic and fired up, then we consider, oh, they're enthusiastic. No. They're sentimentally inspired. Right? If they have knowledge, then when they're inspired, that's called enthusiasm. Right? Does that make sense? You may evoke that inspiration, that enthusiasm through sentiment, but because the knowledge has already been given. Does that make sense? But the knowledge is not enough to get them to make the endeavor. So through sentiment, you'll inspire that, but they're doing it with the knowledge. You understand? While others just hearing the knowledge, then that makes them, may make them inspired. Yes?
That enthusiasm is coming from the bhakti shakti,
and then the shelter. Yeah. It means bhakti shakti would have to be there, yeah. So that has to be evoked, rather than just the mundane. Bottom line is okay, is you may use the purely mundane to inspire somebody to do devotional activities. So we understand as devotional service the person is getting the benefit of agyata sukriti. But you do enough of that agyata sukriti and bhakti is awakened because faith comes. In other words, they're doing it simply because of you or some, you know, emotions, or they like somebody, which is nice, which is good. They're attached to devotees, it's good. But at some point, it's got to be their own faith, their own commitment that drives them on in devotional service. But unfortunately, that can get in the way, because if they're working on their own steam, then what is my need? Does that make sense?
You know? Like you see, temple president has all the new bhaktas and he has to do everything for them, but, you know, after some years, then they're not new bhaktas anymore and they're responsible, but then he feels some lack that, well, what am I doing here? Because before I had to do everything for them and now basically they can run the temple and I just have to inspire them in that. So there is that emotional adjustment that has to be made. Same with parents. When there's the smaller they are, the more dependent. The bigger they are, the less dependent. That creates a crisis, emotional crisis of what is the need of my existence? Who am I? What, you know, this is what's called midlife crisis. You know, it's because all those things that you endeavored for either became fruitful, now they're running, or it's obvious now after, you know, 20, 30 years, it's not going to work, so I should try something new. You know what I'm saying? So one's whole identity and existence and need comes into question. That's why it's mentioned as a spiritual platform, is that one is able to accommodate, or one is inspired by that someone who is junior to you actually advances and becomes more advanced than you quicker. Like that. That's a spiritual principle. Like that. If you have that, then it becomes very easy. And then one actually sees that these things are there because of my attachment. I connect them to Krishna. Then simultaneously, as I become less important for the actual functioning, but I have the knowledge and the detachment from having connected it to Krishna, that therefore I can move on very in a dignified way. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why the whole Vedic thing is worked out so nicely, you know, to be able to do all that. But the point is you want to get it, so even if it doesn't work out so ideally, if one has the knowledge, one knows how to work, and so therefore one will get it done. You know what I'm saying? In other words, one's realistic to know I'm at this point of attachment, and so it's okay to start from there, but it's not okay to remain there. That's the balance. The middle path is that it's not a problem that I'm at this stage because that's where I'm at. So it's being realistic, that's where I am at. But also being realistic, because realism is Krishna, is it's not all right to stay there. I have to progress. And I have to use my intelligence to make that endeavor and progress. Does that make sense? Right, so here he's giving these keys, is that you have the materialist, you have the pure transcendentalist, but you have three stages in between to get there. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Right? So Brahman means the Lord's potencies are everywhere, therefore whatever I'm into is actually still connected to Krishna, though I don't see it. But the scriptures point it out, and so I start to appreciate there's something more going on here than just my needs and my emotions. Next stage is that, well, it is Krishna who's doing it, so that energy, that means in other words, the material item becomes the, how you say? Well, how would you translate the Udipad?
Trigger
stimulus to remembering that actually it's the Lord's energy. The Lord's energy becomes the stimulus that, well, it's the Lord. And then the next stage is the Lord becomes the stimulus where he is there with his devotees, and actually these are the, you know, his full manifestation. Does that make sense? So it's, therefore, intelligence is being used. And that endeavor, that combination, gives knowledge and detachment. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's followed, it works. Means one feels bad about losing an attachment if you're attached to it. But if by working with it you lose the attachment to it, you don't mind having lost the attachment to it. Right? And what we were in the first canto, what was being pointed out, losing the attachment for the material and connecting yourself to spiritual, there is no loss. In fact, it's a gain. Right? Because that has to happen. That faith that, okay, I'm taking, he mentions here, bold. I'm giving up the material attachment, but that spiritual will be there. And it does have substance. Does this make sense? We see, so it's a very nice scientific process how then Vyasadeva is taking us through this, how Sukadeva is taking us through. You know, or here Sutta Goswami is taking us through this process that we are material, there is spiritual, that's great, we all like that, but that means you have to give up the material, but then will the spiritual be there for me? You know, this one's not there for me, that one's not there for me, everything's, you know, not there for me, so why would Krishna be there for me? Right? But the point is Krishna's entered into everything, so everything that you think is important, it's already Krishna anyway. He's already supporting you. Everything you want, everything you value, it's Krishna anyway. He's doing that for you. So that's not serious. Right? Who can claim that, yes, my husband is there, entered into everything, and is in between everything, and everything that's important to me is actually him. Right? Anyone can, I mean, Rukmini Devi, of course, can claim that. We get from these verses here. You know, that's her point. So, if one hasn't happened to have married Krishna, you know, I mean, any of the forms here, you know, Rukmini Devi is, you know, it's like even Vishnu Vasudeva is pretty good, right? But then we can see that Krishna is in everything that is there anyway. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because that's what it is. So, he is there. He's already there. Before you even knew that there was such a thing as somebody being there for you, he was already there. Right? And it's obvious that not necessarily everybody else is there for you, but even though they're not there for you, Krishna is still there. Does that make sense? You know, a relationship falls apart, you know, it feels like the earth gives away under your feet, but it doesn't. That's what you feel like, because that's what the other person's done for you, but Krishna didn't go away. Earth was still there. Does that make sense? You feel like you're going to die, but you didn't, because Krishna's still there. Does that make sense? So that's the point. He's always there, so the whole thing, the first canto is giving us that faith in that. And now, having that faith, then we can actually seriously take up the process as being enumerated here. And so this process that is being given is something very alive. It's not intellectual, you know, as such, meaning that it's theoretical and it doesn't apply to us. The Bhagavatam is written for us. It's not written for somebody else. Right? Does that make sense? So the second canto, fifth canto, all these different things are written for us because, you know, we're not sitting there looking at the universal form in the sky like Arjuna was, but we're everything that we're dealing with, then we're able to appreciate that. And then we're able to appreciate that it's Krishna. Then we're able to appreciate the pastimes. Him as a person. In other words, you'll get the energy here. Okay. Let's try this one. We've heard name, form, qualities, pastimes, right? Yeah? So in the name, then you could also, then in this way, equate it to the potency, right? Because we say the name and the Lord are non-different, right? What is it, that one verse, something nama namine? You know, it's that the Lord and his energy, I mean, the Lord and the name is the same potency, right? So the word potency is used. Right? The second verse of the Shiksha, the potency is used. So, therefore then, that potency is the first that's seen. Right? Then from that, then is Paramatma will be appreciated. So that's form. Right? So then, after that, then this Paramatma has qualities. Right? So we're starting to take on there, and we're bridging between Paramatma and Bhagavan. Right? And then when those qualities are fully appreciated, then pastimes will manifest. And that all comes out of the same thing. So the gopis see a black tamal tree and they think of Krishna and his pastimes and how he takes care and what he looks like. And in other words, they get the whole thing. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. 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 M There's when he says Mune Psadu Prishtam, when what is the purpose of question, what is the good question? There's a it made that he's pleasing the person who's asked to. He was happy with the question by the sages they gave. And in Bhavad Viloka Mangalam it was good for beneficial for the whole world. And it's connected to Krishna.
Okay.
That was a special question.
Okay. Means who is pleased? The person asked
the person
or the
person
being asked?
Being
okay.
Both because it's related to yourself also. It's a
okay.
Related to yourself.
Okay. Catch that? Means he's saying another point that's being brought out here is that in the process, because here we're giving the, you know, we've heard it and we're applying it. That's what I've been mainly emphasizing. He's pointing out that in these verses then has come out the point that the process of getting to that, right, that the question itself was beneficial for others, it was pleasantly asked, so everyone's satisfied with the question, right? Not that we're satisfied with the question because we finally got it off our chest and we were able to blurt it out and blow everyone away, and no, that's not beneficial. That the person asking it and the person receiving the question, they're all happy. It's beneficial for everyone because it's connected to the Supreme Lord. Right? So, even in the process of questioning, it has to have this element that it's connected to the Lord. Right? Just like we're trying to connect everything in our sphere of our activities to the Lord. So the questions itself, in other words, gaining that knowledge and gaining the understanding, the knowledge and skills to perform the devotional process should also contain the same element. Right? In other words, everything is consistent because it's all Krishna. So there's no contradiction between any one aspect and another because it functions on the same. Right? Like we showed there, how between the process of chanting the holy name, the advancement through that, and through engaging, which is Bhagavat, and through the process of engaging the external, or through Varnashram, like that, that it's actually the same process. Right? In other words, you're going through name, form, qualities, pastimes. Does that make sense? Yes? No? So it's all consistent. So the same way as asking the, so in other words, you're taking what's mundane and connecting it to Krishna, right? And you're considering the time, place, and circumstance of the people you're working with, right? Does that make sense? So therefore, the question is considering you, the person you're asking it to, and Krishna. So it's also consistent in its following that same process of connecting the mundane, which means the oral mundane vibration, you know, from the material tongue to the material ear being digested by the material mind, and you're connecting Krishna to that, so it becomes spiritualized. Therefore, it becomes beneficial, and it's therefore purifying. Does that make sense? So in the same way as I am seeing that the name is Krishna, even though I'm just vibrating, because the karmis can also vibrate the name, and if they didn't get it from the right source, it's just, you know, syllables. But they've gotten it from the right source, so it has the Lord's potency in it. Recognizing that, then we see the Lord in it, then we get the benefit. Or we see the Lord in our sphere of activities. Right? And because it means we have a mundane sphere, but because we see Krishna in it, then it becomes spiritualized. Right? So in other words, we're taking the external energy, and because we're seeing it and acting with it in connection with Krishna, it gives us a spiritual result. Does that make sense? Whatever it is. That is a fundamental formula. And so then that can be applied anywhere. Does that make sense? Okay. So we were discussing it in just more in the cultural sense, and he's brought out that in that cultural sense there's the question of obtaining that understanding. So even obtaining it, applying it, appreciating it, it'll still go through the same process. Okay?
You still had a question? Or it's answered. Okay. Yes.
When you take a material thing, let's say a microphone, and a non-devotee will use it as a tool, but it's not concerning Krishna, and a devotee will use it, giving a lecture to Krishna consciousness. So that, the spiritualizing of a material thing, is that mostly just how we're seeing something, or physically is there a difference between the two microphones? I mean,
when you say
it's spiritualized, is that our concept of how we think of it, or is it the actual body of it is changed because it's used in Krishna's service?
Does a copper wire change when you put electricity through it? It's the same copper, right? But the effect of that copper is different. So I'm saying it's the same microphone. But so it doesn't, the point is it doesn't matter what it is, it's the result it gets or the experience it creates. You know, it's just like you may go to the nicest restaurant. And then, you know, and everything's very nice, and the music, and the lights, and the food, and the everything. And then in the booth next to you, then, you know, an argument starts, and, you know, the husband pulls out a shotgun and blows away his wife, and, you know, it makes a bit of a mess. And then, you know, it's, you could say it's the same restaurant, you know, and all that, but it's different, you know. You know, we're not talking Kurukshetra here. We're talking, you know what I'm saying?
The effect
is what you want. It's nothing to do with the place.
The effect on your consciousness.
Yeah, because the consciousness is the thing. It's not that there needs to be a physical change. If you change the consciousness, then you change the subtle, which will change the gross. You know what I'm saying? But the point is the external energy does not have to itself be spiritual energy for the process to work. Because technically speaking, it's only called material because that's how we see it. Means the 24 elements as such are Brahman. So technically speaking, they're spiritual. But they're inferior spiritual. You know? And so for us, inferior spiritual has no meaning because we're superior spiritual. So there's nothing, means how we function as Satchitananda, it functions the opposite. Right? Because when you have light, you have to have dark. Otherwise, what does light mean? If I say this is sweet, it only has meaning if there's, you know, salty. You know, or it's hot, it only has meaning if it's cold. Does that make sense? So, in other words, to affect rasa, you have to have differences. Right? You have to have two people. That would be, right? That's why the shanta rasa technically is not called a rasa, because it's one-sided. There's no interaction. You know? It is a rasa. It means, in other words, meaning that there is a mellow, there is a taste, there's an experience. But you can't really call it because it's not. Therefore, Atmarama, you can say, is a rasa, because Krishna is rasa, but it's only when he manifests all the elements of rasa, all the devotees, that then you see rasa is able to be appreciated, you know, and experienced to a, you know, on a reciprocal basis. So the point is the microphone has been imbued with the chit potency because the devotee has the chit potency. They've received it from other devotees. So when they speak, then that goes out and that enters the heart of the people in that crowd. So now they've been affected, touched by the chit potency. Now if they do anything that they heard coming through that microphone, it has the power of the chit potency and they will get spiritual result. You know what I'm saying? If a non-devotee says exactly the same thing through the same microphone, they won't get the spiritual result. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's important to note. It means it is so that it's the chit potency that's doing the work. Therefore, the emphasis on knowledge and activity, because chit potency is avideya. Right? Does that make sense?
I was just thinking, like, the paraphernalia that's used in the worship of the Lord is considered the intention of the vellum.
Yeah, it means his potencies are there.
It's
more directly obvious because it's directly connected to the Lord. While your house, it's the same thing. It's Balaram's holding up the walls and all that. So it's his Shakti. When you do the Bhumi Puja, you're asking Balaram to please hold the building up, put his energies there and hold it up. So it's there, but it's less obvious because it's my house. You know, and in that house I have all my activities that I do with my family. But when you're doing the deity worship, it's obvious it's not my paraphernalia, it's God's paraphernalia. It's in his temple, in his room, on his terms, at his time. And, you know, and I had to take a bath to be here. You know, I couldn't just come as I was. You know, so therefore it's more obvious that it's him. Because that's the thing, is the Bhagavat has been formalized into ritual as Pancharatra. But it's still directly connected to the Lord. Well, Varnashram, or the Vedic, means that it means by perception, means by, we may not perceive its connection to the Lord because it's not obviously direct, because the concept of I and mine are more allowed to come into play because that's the depth of conditioning of the living entity. So I and mine, which means your sambandha and prayojana, right? I is sambandha, mine is prayojana. Or, so therefore, now we're given the opportunity that this I and mine, then through the chit potency, through knowledge and devotional endeavor, can be connected to Krishna. So then the I becomes it's the house that Krishna has given me to there, and it's, you know, those, how you say? Yeah. Means these things have been given to me by Krishna to use in his service. So the I and mine becomes dovetailed. But it's through knowledge and endeavor that it actually happens. Right? That's why we always bring up the point that you can say it, and that's good, that you've said it, and you can say, yes, yes, oh, my family, my house, everything's engaged in Krishna's service. Great. That's good, because that means, you know, it's been thought about and it's important to you. But are you continually understanding that and applying it that way? If not, then there may be less of a result coming. You know, you've gone through all the endeavor, you made all the money, you know, you made the house, you're enjoying the house and all that, and then once every 6 months you have a little gathering and some people come over and you have a kirtan and distribute prashad. So now all that 6 months of endeavor and attachment now become connected to the Lord. But you got one night of connection to 6 months of attachment. So it is there, and it did progress. And you can be happy that, yes, my house was connected in this way, because that's generally how devotees will connect it. You know, they don't connect it through the universal form. So then you can say, yes, it's done. Yeah, because you always go, and there's always, means it's always, yes, here's the this and that, and, you know, here's a big kitchen and big living room, and that's because we can cook prashad and have programs. And but how often do the programs happen? That's another question. But the option is there. So that determination is there, so therefore there's connection, it's good. But there, in reality, how much they actually do it, then that's another thing. So the more you connect it according to the way you say you're connecting it, the more benefit you get. And the less you do, of course, the less. So if that's continual, that's what Krishna says in the Gita, where it's continuous, that's when it's Krishna takes it seriously. You know? But it's not that the other is not good. It's a start. But to, as we mentioned in the beginning, to say, that's where I'm at and that's good enough, it's not good enough. Because if you think it's good enough, then why is it Krishna makes such a mess out of it and takes it away and turns everything upside down? and you're bothered by that. Well, you could say, well, look at Krishna took away from the Pandavas, but they're not bothered. Right? They're not bothered that they're out in the forest. And that they like the forest. They grew up in the forest with the sages. So there's nothing better for them. But as Kshatriyas, they have the duty to see that the populace is guided properly. Not only protected, but guided in Krishna consciousness. Duryodhana cannot do that. So he's not the right man to be there. Yudhishthira can do that. So it's proper that Yudhishthira sits on the throne. That's their approach. Even Draupadi, when she's going on this whole tirade about the thing, it's that Yudhishthira is religious. He's qualified to be the king and not Duryodhana. You know, so how could he be so stupid to lose it all, you know, in a gambling match? Because you're the one that's supposed to be there. It's not like, well, I was the empress and now I got nothing and now they'll let... No. You know, that's not a problem there. You know, that's between her and the ladies. You know, they laughed at me. You know, now they're going to be crying. Is that okay?
Well, we also went to Saturn, right? We offered to Saturn. And I don't know if it's true, but they said one time you were
because it has Krishna's potency in it. Point is it's like this. I mean, this will come up later, you know, you have to wait in our orientation course. These things will all be addressed. But we've been conditioned to that if physically, observably, it is not adjust, it is not proof. Right? We've gotten this from the mundane, the modern Shaktas, which we call scientists. Right? Like that. They are simply absorbed in material energy. That's all they believe in. And if you can't see it with your senses, then that. But you understand it, so therefore we take it that the actual molecules or atoms themselves have to change, and do they actually become spiritual? Is that no? But that doesn't matter. That's why I gave the examples are never given like that, because we're not like that. We're talking about the consistency. Is the example is the copper wire and the electricity, or iron and fire? We never say that the iron actually turns into fire, because fire is simply an element that is burning off of something. Even there's a fire there, it's burning off of something, off of coal or off of electricity or something. There's something that is happening there that it's burning off of. Right? So the coal never becomes fire. Right? But it's when it's hot, it's as good as fire, because the fire comes from it. So the iron becomes imbued with fire. Or the copper wire becomes imbued with electricity. That's all that matters. Just like the jiva, which is tatastha shakti, will be imbued with the internal potency, and it will act as internal potency. You know what I'm saying? We will never become internal potency. We will always eternally be tatastha shakti. But because we have absorbed ourselves to that degree in the internal potency, then where the effect is internal potency. The distinction is not made, right? You know what I'm saying? Just like Maya herself eternally worships Srimati Radharani. So because she's imbued with that devotion, therefore that form is not considered material. You know what I'm saying? Even though she is made up of inferior Brahman. You know what I'm saying? But there's no difference. So the same way as when we take something and use it in Krishna's service, it's spiritual. Like that. So what happens is we have this mundane identity, our mundane conception of things. And that gets in our way. Because we think that physically has to completely... You know, in other words, there must be something mystic about it. Like that. But it's not... It's mystical because it's metaphysical, but it's a science, so therefore it's not mystic, meaning there's mystique. Right? So because of ignorance, then we appreciate mystique. But actually, it's science, so there's no mystique. But it's metaphysical, so you can say it's mystical. But we know the science of metaphysical, so it's not a bewilderment. It doesn't bother us. It's solid to us. You know, does that make sense? Just like for someone who's into psychology, people's emotions and that are solid tools that they work with. To someone else, there's something you know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay.
They see that the scientists, they prove that if you look at the water with a nice consciousness, then the molecules, they rearrange and make different formation, and that's more beneficial than you just drink it later.
Yes, sir. Well, that's why it's said that
it does change it.
The brahmachari, when he receives the food, then if he is happy that he's gotten it and is grateful that he's gotten it, then it will give him health and energy and intelligence, and you know, all good things will come about. And if he's not happy with it, then he'll do just the opposite. It'll actually destroy him. So much for the spoiled brats and like that, you know. So like that. Like that. But the point is it's still the same, how you say?
Yes.
Molecules. Mm-hmm. My point is because of the energy, they may adjust. Just like you could say, but that's changing. It's just like if you're happy, does not the physical body change? There's more brightness, there's a smile, there's a glitter in the eye, the hand movements and all that are different than if you're sad. But it's still the same body, the same. That's my point, is that they will change, but that's there. And you can perceive that if you want to go through that endeavor. But the point is it doesn't have to change from being material energy to, you know, internal potency to actually give the spiritual result. That's the point. You know. Does that make sense? Okay, anything else? Or? Okay. Okay. 1.3, chapter 1, Shloka Anushadhanam, summary study of the chapter's verses. The chapter opens with Sukadeva Goswami praising Maharaj Purikit's question. The previous study guide presents it as the last two questions of Canto 1, namely, I am therefore begging you, Sukadeva Goswami, to show the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one who is about to die. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. Question 119, 37, 38, questions 26 and 27. Sukadeva begins his answer by glorifying the Shravana process that sanctifies the ears, heart, and memory via submissive oral reception of the sublime vibrations of Krishna Katha. Regardless of the process one uses, he says the highest perfection of life is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. Okay. So he's basically pointing out is that in answering means there's two questions, but the theme is basically one. So therefore, even though it's been expressed through two questions and the two times he's asked it, it's been given more detail or more depth to it or more, yeah. But it doesn't matter because the point is common. Therefore, it can be answered as one. Does that make sense? Like that. That's sometimes a technique when you discuss something with somebody. Find out what are all the questions, because then you see what's common amongst them, and then you can answer them all together as one consistent body, right? And if there is a very different thing, then you divide it up. Does that make sense? It's a common way of using it, because he's saying, what should you do in all circumstances? That includes death. You know, but to prepare for death means practice, so that means you have to be doing that in all circumstances. And so what you should do includes what you shouldn't do. So if I've asked, well, what should you not do, that's already included in what should you do. Does that make sense? So you can take it, though these are details, and for explanation, you would probably find you would want to break it up so that it becomes clear to who you're discussing it to. And all these all these are there in his mind, so these questions come up and has all this variety to it. But the actual answer is just, if you are hearing and remembering about the Lord, then that's the perfection. Because if you do that at the time of death, you go back to Godhead. You do that when it's, you know, when it's not time of death, then you will, you know, progress towards the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, if you just do that, you don't need any other answer. Now, if you're distracted by other things that keep you from doing that, therefore we have the, what you shouldn't do. Right? What's the yama? Okay, don't do this, don't do that. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Sukadev says the topmost transcendentalists take pleasure in always describing the glories of the Lord. He relates how he studied Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Srila Vyasadeva, at the end of the Dwapara Yuga. Although he was already situated on the transcendental platform, Sukadev still became attracted by the Bhagavatam's description of the Lord's pastimes. So this establishes that, okay, you want to get out of the material world, so some may say, okay, I worship the Lord to get out of the material world. Right? But then, just like in the other one, yeah, but the point is that the Lord's still attracted beyond that, and it's still, and it's transcendental. That attraction is transcendental. Because otherwise there's the thing, well, I'm attracted to what's here, if I give that up, will I get some substance on the spiritual platform? Right? That's one side. The other side is, okay, I accept the spiritual platform, but devotional service will get me to that spiritual platform, but once I get there, why do I need devotional service anymore? Right? But the point is devotional service is attractive beyond liberation. So Sukadev therefore was liberated and then he was attracted. Does that make sense? So therefore for the Karmi or the Jnani, both and then get faith in the devotional process, the result that it'll give of devotion will satisfy both their needs. Right? The Karmi wants to be happy, you know, in relationships, but there is the ultimate relationship, so therefore the ultimate happiness. And for the Jnani, he wants to be freed from material existence. You will be freed, but why just get any old ordinary freedom? Get the topmost freedom of relationship with the Lord. Right? So therefore these have both been cleared. Okay? Yeah? Okay, so we'll end here. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gaur Premi.